Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record, formerly the Paxton Record, for Thursday, March 15, 2018. We begin our reading today with an article entitled, Fired Worker Hired as Assistant to Ford County Assessor. Paxton. The Ford County Board has filled a longtime vacancy in the assessment office. Kimberly Hooper was hired by the board Monday night as assistant to the assessor at a rate of $13.37 an hour. Hooper most recently worked for the Cunningham Township as an assessing officer, but Assessor Wayne Williams fired her and another employee, Jamie Willard, when he took over as successor. Williams was elected assessor after running unopposed last spring. He assumed office January 1st under state law provisions. Hooper later applied for the Ford County Supervisor of Assessments position, which was left vacant last month after the resignation of Patricia Langland. The board appointed former Supervisor of Assessments Candace Short to fill the position temporarily last month. Hooper needed to pass an exam given by the Illinois Department of Revenue in order to qualify for the Supervisor of Assessments job. Hooper told the board's personnel committee that if she were appointed, she would move from Mahomet to Ford County. Hooper did not pass the test, about which committee head Tom McQuinn said, "Nobody passes the first time." As a result, the board also decided to post an advertisement for the Supervisor of Assessments vacancy and sponsor an additional test by the Illinois Department of Revenue to be given at the courthouse in Paxton within the next several weeks. Hooper and anyone else who wishes to take the exam may do so then. Langland became the lightning rod for the ire of upset property owners when she and other assessors reassessed properties in the northern portion of the county, resulting in large increases in value for most. The Ford County Board of Review later voted to reverse the controversial new assessments that Langland had assigned to some 1,300 properties in eight communities. Langland used an improper method to reassess the properties, the Board of Review members said, in taking the action. Meanwhile, Short was first appointed to the position 15 years ago. She retired as Supervisor of Assessments on June 30, 2016. Overall, she worked for 19 and a half years in the Supervisor of Assessments office. She was hired last month for up to 60 days at a rate of $60 per hour. Also during Monday's board meeting, two Ford County residents spoke to the board, citing their satisfaction with wind farms and the current ordinance governing them in the county. The board has placed a moratorium on the development of further wind farms and also other solar farms in the county until the ordinance is rewritten to the board's satisfaction. Donald Hansen said wind farms bring in valuable tax money, and he is in favor of the construction of the Apex project in the western part of the county. Hansen said he thinks setback requirements are fine, and said that abandoned turbine sites would be no more a problem than concrete foundations left from old farm buildings. "One of our largest assets is the wind," Hansen told the board. Ronald Moore, who has farmed for years in the area where Apex wants to install turbines and has served on the county zoning board of appeals, asked the county board, "What's the problem with what we've written in the ordinance already?" Moore said he had spoken with McLean County landowners who have no complaint on a wind farm that has been in operation in the county for years. "What we hear are unprovable points of contention," Moore said. "I'm not sure that anything we're really trying to change would have changed the problems in the northern part of the county." For months, Kempton area homeowners complained to the board about the problems with television reception caused by EDF Renewable Energy's wind farm and the company's efforts to mitigate them. And the county is still negotiating with EDF to ensure road and ditch work is done to the county engineers and Roger Township satisfaction. Board Chairman Randy Berger said he received 9 letters of support of wind farms. Berger said he imagined that was true for the rest of the board as well. Now from Gibson City. Gibson City Council learns of upcoming property tax appeal case. Gibson City Council members discussed an upcoming property tax appeal case during their meeting Monday night. Mayor Dan Dickey said the city received a notification from the Ford County Board of Review informing the city that Phillips Warner Realty, The firm, led by State Representative Reggie Phillips, a Republican of Charleston, which owns the Villas of Holyoke Assisted Living Facility in Gibson City, is attempting to lower its $1,650,000 assessment down to $1,245,000. Ida Walz, president of the Moyer District Library Board of Trustees, told council members that she plans to attend the March 21st hearing in Paxton on the library's behalf. "The board asked me to represent them because they're worried about this," Walz said. "It's going to affect the city, schools, library, the fire protection district, and ultimately it is going to affect the taxpayers." Wall said that Phillips Warner is a tax increment financing district. It should not have its taxes decreased. "They want to go back to the rate they were given in 2015, Wall said. "I understand that they're either at capacity or near capacity. We gave them a TIF district, several hundred thousand dollars from the city to be put back into the TIF district, and I think we've given them enough." Dickey clarified Wall's remarks by stating that not all of the city's taxing bodies would be affected by the change all at once. "Right now, it would affect the city, the fire department, and the schools," Dickey said. "At the end of the TIF, it could affect all other taxing bodies. At this time, it's only trying to affect those three entities." Dickey also said the city normally does not take sides in a property tax case. "Our policy in the past has been to stay neutral," Dickey said. "We've decided to stay out of it, as we did with One Earth Energy." City Attorney Mark Miller added that he has normally not seen the cities themselves involved in appeals cases. "Usually I see the school districts involved, since they're going to get the biggest hit," Miller said. "I usually don't see the municipalities getting involved, because the cost of getting into it, they asked for a reduction and it was denied, so they're going through the appeals process." Walz told the council that she plans to speak at the upcoming hearing. "At this time, we do plan to attend the hearing, and I do plan to express my views. First of all, what they're comparing Holyoke to is not applicable in my mind," Walz said, "and they're comparing it to a nursing home and one other thing, which is kind of out there in left field." We have three articles dealing with an incident in Clarence, so what we'll do is we'll just begin with them in the order that they were printed. First, Clarence men charged with possession of machine gun. Urbana. On Tuesday, FBI agents arrested four rural East Central Illinois men on a criminal complaint that charges them with the possession of a machine gun. The men arrested and charged are Michael B. Harry, 47, Joe Morris, 22, Michael McWhorter, 29, and Ellis Mack, 18. All of Clarence, a rural community approximately 35 miles north of Urbana-Champaign. FBI agents arrested Harry Tuesday morning as he was traveling to a court appearance in Ford County for a hearing in an alleged assault case pending against him. Harry and Morris made their initial appearances in federal court Tuesday afternoon before U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric I. Long. McWhorter and Mack will make their respective appearances at a date to be determined by the U.S. Clerk of the Court. The arrest and charges were announced by FBI Special Agent in Charge Sean Cox of the Springfield Division and U.S. Attorney John E. Childress. The affidavit filed in support of the complaint alleges that the four men were in possession of assault weapons from October 2017 to March 2018. According to the affidavit, law enforcement agents have gathered evidence to indicate that Harry, McWhorter, and Morris were responsible for the bombing of a mosque in Bloomington, Minnesota on August 5, 2017, and the attempted bombing of the women's health practice in Champaign on November 7, 2017. Tuesday morning, law enforcement agents executed search warrants at the home of Harry's parents in Paxton. According to the affidavit, Harry often stays at his parents' home because his home has no running water or electricity. A search warrant was also executed at a store and office owned by Harry located at 100 South Main Road in Clarence. Federal Bureau of Investigation Springfield Division, FBI Minneapolis Division, University of Illinois Police Department, Fort County Sheriff's Office, Champaign Police Department, the Illinois State Police, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives are continuing the investigation. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Jason M. Baum and Eugene L. Miller are representing the government on behalf of the U.S. Attorney's Office, working in coordination with the U.S. Attorney's Office for the District of Minnesota. Our next article is entitled, Updated, Sheriff Still Concerned About Harry's Militia Group. Clarence. Before Michael B. Harry's arrest Tuesday on federal charges in connection with a bombing in Minnesota and an attempted bombing in Champaign, his anti-government militia group was planned to hold a protest on Saturday in Harry's hometown of Clarence, opposing the FBI and local law enforcement abuse of the community's citizens. We plan to cook out and serve food, said a March 10th post on mymilitia.com under the screen name Illinois Patriot. Please come and let the FBI know that breaking indoors, coercing searches and seizures, wiretaps, and other such action is not acceptable in America. We are desperately hoping for some size to the crowd. Less than a week earlier, Harry's organization, the White Rabbit 3% Illinois Patriot Freedom Fighters Militia, also known as the White Rabbits, posted a YouTube video in which its ski masks wearing members requested other militia groups across the nation to join them in helping them take our town back. Ford County Sheriff Mark Duran said he was aware of Harry's organization and its contacts with other militant groups. Duran said Wednesday he remains concerned about the organization, even though Harry and three other members, all from Clarence, had been taken into federal custody for possession of a machine gun, a charge he intended to hold them while the government seeks additional charges. Yeah, I'm still concerned about it because you have no idea what could happen, Duran said. I know Harry has contacts in several different states, and we are aware of his contacts with other militia groups. So it is a concern that other people, not knowing the situation, may come to the Ford County area to conduct operations, militia-type operations, here in Ford County. That is a concern, but we are aware of it. Duran said that if the protest goes on as planned, we'll head over that way and make sure things stay peaceful. Harry, a former Ford County Sheriff Deputy and one-time Libertarian candidate for sheriff, is believed to have been the leader of the White Rabbits, whose members wear ski masks, boots, olive-covered shirts and pants, and a round patch depicting a white rabbit and the phrase, "Ain't no fun when the rabbit got the gun." The group practices armed resistance, anything from simply marching or protesting with a weapon in hands to actively resisting government authority. But the group claims it does not condone acts of violence such as terrorism, lynching, or rioting. We don't do terrorism, we don't do assassination, we don't murder policemen. That's not the kind of revolution this is, a White Rabbits video member says in one YouTube video. We don't necessarily have to have a weapon to belong, the member continues. If you're brave and you're committed to liberty, that's all we're requiring of you. Ironically, the four White Rabbit members charged by the U.S. government, the 47-year-old Harry, along with Michael McWhorter, 29, Joe Morris, 22, and Ellis, E.J. Mack, 18, are believed to have been responsible for at least two acts of terrorism. The October 5, 2017 firebombing of the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota, and the November 7, 2017 attempted bombing of the women's health practice at 2125 South Neal Street in Champaign. Harry is also suspected of placing multiple explosive devices at a neighbor's property on Main Street in Clarence in February, and sending an anonymous tip to the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Harry is currently charged in Ford County Circuit Court with the assault of the man whose property the devices were found. It was following that February incident that Harry and his group went to YouTube to express their frustrations with the federal and local law enforcement agencies that were investigating. Calling it the Clarence Crisis, the White Rabbits said the constitutional rights of their members and Clarence's citizens were violated when agents would not allow them onto their own properties as the investigation was underway. They sealed off the north end of town, a White Rabbits member says on the YouTube video. They got searched a lot of properties with no consent, no warrant, no nothing. They told property owners to get lost. They blockaded driveways, wouldn't let people get home. They claimed it was because of a kind of bomb scare. They claim to have detonated some devices up there, but we really don't know of any such thing to be a fact. It's just what we were told. But definitely, people in the community were alarmed at the intrusion. People were definitely upset over what happened. Federal authorities then visited Clarence again, this time seizing some weapons and cell phones from a White Rabbits member's home, according to the YouTube video. "We're asking the militia support to come and help us with this situation, because we feel like, first off, it's a really bad precedent, and secondly, all our liberties are on the line. If they can come into a town like ours and just rule it like they have, they can do this anywhere. We need you to come and stand with us." The White Rabbits claim that about one half of the homes in the small rural community of Clarence have at least one household member who belongs to their group. The organization claims that the federal government used this whole pipe bomb situation at Harry's neighbor's property solely as a pretext to go after our organization. "They became aware of our organization. They became aware that it was gaining some power and some traction, and that our little community actually represented a lot of people in the organization, and they decided to crush that, to put an end to that by terrorizing the people," a White Rabbits member says in the YouTube video. "And that absolutely just cannot stand. We need to have at least some kind of protest to show that this doesn't stand in America. We need to have some kind of protest to come out of this whole situation. That's what we really need. Some way that we can speak back and say, hey, this is not acceptable. You don't come into our communities and threaten our mothers. You don't come in here and threaten our fathers. You don't come in here and threaten people. You don't just seize their cell phones. You don't just run wild over a whole town." The White Rabbits member, who appears in all of the group's YouTube videos, never discloses his name, but he does disclose that he is a former police officer in one of the videos. Meanwhile, the writer of the with the username IllinoisPatriotOnMyMilitia.com says in one post that he was a 1998 Libertarian candidate for sheriff and served on the Ford County Board of Assessments as a Libertarian, while also being a Waco protester. All of these elements are of Harry's storied past. The White Rabbits believe socialism and Marxism are encroaching upon America. "You can read what we believe on our website," a White Rabbits member says on the YouTube video clip. "There's some kind of inflammatory language on there, but if you read what we're about, it shouldn't be controversial to any Americans. We stand against corruption. We stand against the regulation and taxation that's taken over this country. The political correctness, just plain socialism that's creeping everywhere we look. If you feel like your freedoms are being curtailed every day, and you're getting a little further away from the country you grew up in, then probably you're already one of us." And the last story. Feds link Ford County trio to Minnesota mosque bombing, attempted Champaign clinic bombing, Urbana. Four Ford County men are in federal custody for possession of a machine gun, a charge intended to hold them, while the government seeks additional charges that allegedly link three of them to a mosque bombing in Minnesota and the attempted bombing of a women's health clinic in Champaign last year. The four are Michael Harry, 47, Michael McWhorter, 29, Joe Morris and Ellis E.J. Mack, 18, all of Clarence, a small community in southeastern Ford County, about halfway between Paxton and Rankin, about 35 miles northeast of Urbana. Harry, a former Ford County Sheriff's deputy and one-time Libertarian candidate for sheriff, is believed to have been the leader of a homegrown domestic terrorism group to which the other men belonged. In a hearing Tuesday afternoon, Magistrate Judge Eric Long remarked that the weight of the evidence is fairly strong and ordered that Harry be held until trial. Both Harry and Morris made initial appearances, while McWhorter and Mack are supposed to be in court Wednesday. As authorities of the Central District of Illinois were announcing their arrests, federal prosecutors in the District of Minnesota were doing the same. Harry, Morris, and McWhorter have been charged in criminal complaints that state that with arson for the August 5th firebombing of the Dar al-Farouk Islamic Center in Bloomington, Minnesota. A 15-page probable cause affidavit in support of their arrests linked those three to the August bombing that happened in Bloomington during the early morning hours while people were present, and the November 7th attempted bombing of the women's health practice at 2125 South Neal Street, Champaign. In the Minnesota explosion, five men were in the mosque about 5 a.m. when a bomb exploded, doing extensive damage to the building, but apparently not injuring any people. In the Champaign bombing attempt, the employee arrived for work about 7:30 a.m. on November 7th, discovered a broken window, and found a piece of PVC pipe with thermite, a pyrotechnic compound, inside. The pipe had duct tape on one end and a plastic cap on the other. A bomb technician concluded the device found in the surgical room with oxygen tanks was intended to burn. However, it did not. We'll take a break from that article now and turn to the obituaries. If we have time after the obituaries, we'll return back to the article. Gregory Joseph Ainsworth, Piper City. Gregory Joseph Ainsworth, 64, of Danforth, formerly of Piper City in Yorkville, died Wednesday, March 7, 2018, as the result of an automobile accident. Funeral services were held Monday, March 12th at the Presbyterian Church in Piper City, with the Reverend Wade Diddy officiating. At the Presbyterian Church in Piper City. Memorials may be made to the Presbyterian Church in Piper City or Moosart Child City and School in Moosart, Illinois. Selda Marie Coffey, Paxton. Selda Marie Coffey, 83, of Paxton, died at 2:19 p.m. Wednesday, March 14, 2018, at Gibson Area Hospital in Gibson City. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, March 17th, at the Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Deborah Domeyer officiating. Burial will follow in the Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, March 16th, at the funeral home, and also 1 hour prior to the services on Saturday, March 17th. Memorials may be made to the Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Loda. John G. Dusty Davis, Gibson City. John G. Dusty Davis, 82, died Wednesday, March 7, 2018, at his home in Gibson City, surrounded by family. Funeral services were held Monday, March 12th at the Gibson City United Methodist Church, with the Reverend John Tennyson officiating. Burial was in Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City, with military rites accorded. As a loving and giving person, in lieu of other expressions of sympathy, Mr. Davis would want memorial contributions to be made to the Shriners Hospital for Children. Earl F. Donnelly, Cisna Park. Earl F. Donnelly, 80, of Cisna Park, died Friday, March 9, 2018, at Iroquois Memorial Hospital in Watseka. Funeral services were held Tuesday, March 13th, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park, with the Deacon Pat Skelly officiating. Burial followed at Floral Hill Cemetery in Hoopston. Memorials may be made to his family or to St. John's Lutheran Church at Ash Grove. Stuart James Kunch, and that's spelt K-U-N-S-C-H. Chatsworth. Stuart James Kunch, 58, of Chatsworth, formerly of Gilman, died at 5:32 p.m. Wednesday, March 7, 2018, at his home in Chatsworth. Memorial services were held Thursday, March 15th, at the United Methodist Church in Gilman, with the Reverend Malcolm Jones officiating. Memorials may be made to the United Methodist Church in Gilman. Doris A. Lindstrom, Paxton. Doris A. Lindstrom, 95, of Paxton, died at 4:11 a.m., Saturday, March 10, 2018, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. A private family funeral service will be held. Memorials may be made to the Champaign County Humane Society. Eunice Darlene Holland Voigt Seaman Luck, and that is spelt L-U-C-H-T. The obituary does not include Mrs. Luck's date or time of death. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday, March 20th, at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Congregational Church at Schwer in Melford. Officiating will be the Reverend Stephen Jensen and the Reverend Joseph Sheets. Interment will follow in the Danforth Cemetery, Danforth. Friends may meet with the family from 6 to 8 p.m. Monday, March 19th at the Rodinius Funeral Home in Gilman, and also 1 hour prior to the service at the church on Tuesday, March 20th. Dwayne Edward Dewey Meyer, Gibson City. Dwayne Edward Dewey Meyer, 68, of Gibson City in Flagstaff, Arizona, was released from his earthly bonds and ascended to a higher place on Sunday, February 11, 2018, with Donna and Zach at his side. Dewey was at the Mayo Clinic and Hospital in Phoenix, Arizona. As per Dewey's wishes, cremation rites were accorded. There will be no services. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorial donations may be made in Dewey's name to Gibson City's Moyers District Library, the Villa Grove United Methodist Church, the Museum of Northern Arizona, Flagstaff, Arizona, or the University of Illinois History Library. Shirley Ann Rowe, Gilman. Shirley Ann Rowe, 88, of Gilman, died at 2:30 a.m. Monday, March 12, 2018, at her home in Gilman following a sudden illness. Funeral services were held Thursday, March 15th at the Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman with the Reverend John Franklin officiating. Private burial was held at the Abraham Lincoln National Cemetery in Elwood. Memorials may be made to the Iroquois Memorial Hospice or to an organization of the donor's choice. Daniel Raymond Danny Ray Starkey, Loda. Daniel Raymond Danny Ray Starkey, 46, of rural Loda, died at 4:22 p.m. Wednesday, March 7, 2018, in rural Clarence. Funeral services were held Monday, March 12th at the Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Deborah Dormeyer officiating. Burial followed in the Glen Cemetery in Paxton. In lieu of other expressions of sympathy, memorials may be made to the Loda Good Old Days Fireworks Fund or the Paxton Buckley Loda High School FFA chapter. Manuel F. Butch Yoakum, Paxton. Manuel F. Butch Yoakum, 71, of Paxton, died at 4:34 p.m. Tuesday, March 13, 2018, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Inurnment will be held at a later date in Charleston Cemetery, Indiana. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society. Returning to the previous story, in the affidavit filed in the case in Clarence, on March 10th, Michael McWhorter was interviewed by FBI agents and denied knowledge of explosive or incendiary devices, but said he knew of four shotguns and assault weapons belonging to Harry. He knew three of them to be illegal and admitted that he helped Harry drill an assault weapon to make it capable of fully automatic firing. McWhorter admitted that he helped in the attempted bombing of the women's health practice in Champaign in November. He said he, Harry, and Morris were in a truck that Harry rented in Champaign and that the device they had used had been made in Clarence by Harry. McWhorter also admitted taking part in the August bombing in the Bloomington, Minnesota mosque. He said he, Harry, and Morris drove there in a truck rented in Champaign and that each had specific roles. Harry was the driver, Morris broke the window with a sledgehammer, and McWhorter threw the bomb in and fled before it exploded. McWhorter claimed that it was Harry's idea to target the mosque, not intending to kill anyone, but to scare them Muslims out of the country. McWhorter also said that the group committed three Walmart robberies in Illinois and that he, Harry, and Morris planted the explosive devices on Harry's neighbor's property that the police found in the shed February 19th. Harry has a storied history in Ford County, including a 2005 conviction for abducting his own children. Assistant U.S. Attorney Jason Bohm told Long that the government wanted all three men detained pending trial and that a grand jury is expected to meet in early April to indict the group. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings can be found on our website, www.will.illinois.edu/radio-reader, and on the Ciro app for your smartphone. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.